Blog Talk Radio.
John L. Brown, author and filmmaker, native of Lake Charles, Louisiana, is taking his expose on race relations in America, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, to another level by doing a documentary entitled The Mentally Blind in America. The documentary will open the viewer's eyes to homelessness, poverty, hunger, the real rules of the criminal justice system, and other poverty-related issues that challenge underemployed, unemployed, and homeless people in American post-recession. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary, will enlighten people of color and people in poverty on how to restore their credit rating and expunge their criminal records. The Mentally Blind in America, a documentary coming this fall. Real people, real stories. The Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, a documentary on race, poverty, the recession's aftermath, and more. Follow our post on Facebook's The Mentally Blind in America. The Mentally Blind in America.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the talk show, Uplifting Communities. And I'm your host, Author John L. Brown, and I have my co-host, Ms. Jacqueline Allen, better known as Ms. J. All right, now. And we have a special guest on today, and her name is Mrs. Pam Weston. And this lady here is doing a lot of positive work in the community. But before we go any farther, I would like to ask Ms. J, would she please bring Ms. Pamela on air for us?
Absolutely, absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. And welcome, Ms. Pam. We're excited to have you. I told a lot of people about you, so hopefully they're listening. So before we get started talking about the different information that you have for us, why don't you just give the audience a little bit, tell the audience a little bit about you, you know, who you are, and just give them a little feedback, and we're going to dive right on in there.
Okay. Hello. My name is Pamela Weston, and I live in Monterey County. I basically worked in Soledad Correctional Training Facility for 17 and a half years. Basically, I retired about 3.5 years ago, and I'm a community advocate that works for accountability, transparency, and I help to bring do something for racial equity. In dealing with my own personal life in a county like Monterey, there is no racial equity, and so I try to work towards system reform, and I'm glad to be here today.
Absolutely. Now, where is Monterey County? Because a lot of people may not know where that actually is. So are you up north, Northern California?
We're Central California, so we're
okay.
Between L.A. and the Bay.
Okay. All right. Awesome, awesome. So when you talk about being a community advocate and the premises of all the things that you do, how do you use that information that you do have to uplift the community and share the information that you have? What type of information do you share with the community?
Basically about that it begins with civic engagement, going to local government, basically that through building relationships and reinvestment, that basically there's power in the people, and basically where that there, I've been on front line with police shootings and helped to build basically awareness. The Department of Justice even made a reform initiative because there was not things put into place with use of force. So I've been on the front line when it deals with police brutality. I've been on the front line when it deals with the homeless. I've been on the front line when it deals with health impacts for disparate families, especially black families in Monterey County. So I've been at a lot of different levels as a mom and as a system reform, because when my son didn't get his medication after release from prison, and he died in 2014, I had to be the model and raise up a standard.
Wow. So that's why you take an active part in that Proposition 14 saving.
No, I'm well, even more so now because in Monterey County they didn't do what they were supposed to do for me. But prior to that, being able to work on the main line with those that were doing life sentences, I was able to create a culture change because it was through being able to have the support of the warden and those that are incarcerated that I saw change come when that you do the right thing. So I saw it first in the system and then in my own son's disparity because he's black and he's white. I had to stand up and speak to the systems and inform the people because the biggest thing was that the people don't have access to information and or meetings because they got to work. It's a poor people issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a valid point. And poor people issue.
That's right. And another thing, you know, like we don't have that much time on the show, so we're going to jump in right into what this show is all about. Okay. I see you working for Proposition, for not working for them, but you work in, well, I guess, with your organization, finding out more about Proposition 47. Okay. Could you explain to the audience what this proposition is? Okay. We have a lot. I can see on the board right here, we have quite a few nonprofit organizations that have been called in because, you know, we, as like you and I was talking, the reason why a lot of nonprofits not doing what they, you know, what they really want to do is because it's hard for them to get the money to actually do what they really want to do. So
absolutely.
I would like to jump in, you know, and have you explain to the people on the process of getting funded and things of that nature.
Okay. So the first thing is that with the proposition, there was overcrowding in the systems. So Proposition 47, 4 years ago, we were out in the community and we informed them. It basically, because there was overcrowding and a mandate from the Department of Corrections to stop it, basically they are the people here in California are able to reclassify their basically low-risk felonies into misdemeanors. So put money back into the system. So I know we don't have very much time, but the first thing that people can look at is that the funding, which is $30 million, is going to go into three different places. 65% is going to go to a grant process for mental health and substance abuse and diversion. There's going to be 25% that goes to education and 10% to healing. Why that basically people aren't getting funded is because they're competitive and they use the same language. So knowing that basically that if you're a community that is black or indigenous or low income, you have to know the words to speak and what to say. Yeah. And you have to be informed in the political process. So when I was out in the community, I brought women with me and a friend of mine named James, he's black, and other stories to the Board of State Community Corrections to be involved in their process. See, before that, people can get money. When there's a proposition, there's accountability for savings. And so in Sacramento, basically, that if people want to look in to June 22nd and 23rd, and they want to look at August 10th and 11th. Why people aren't getting funding is because they don't know about meetings like what that I went to. So I don't know if you want to ask for me to clarify that.
Clarify it, yes. Go ahead. You go ahead, clarify it. Because they need to know exactly. Now, the reason why I say that because everybody's level, everybody's knowledge is on a different level. So clarification is always great. So, no, go ahead and clarify.
Okay, how that this deals with bottom line is, in a city like mine, 65% goes to law enforcement. And for the state of corrections, if you can multiply that times 33 prisons, institutions, and juvenile halls, the Board of State Community Corrections, BSCC, if people look at it, it's in on Ventura Oak Way in Sacramento. They govern the money for training. They govern the money for institutions. They govern the money in police brutality, everything. So people don't know about who is the agency that deals with funding to officers and that impact communities that are being faced with police brutality and housing. So the first place, if you're in Louisiana, New York, or anywhere, there's some Board of State Community Corrections that deal with community policing, community institutions, and community relations.
Very good. So even though we're specifically talking about California, it's nice to know, because we have nonprofits in different areas, parts of the country, so it's good to know that they can also check out what's going on in their particular state and area.
Yes, and the second thing is that any meetings they have, it basically dealing with the Browns Act, people should be able to be at those public meetings, since your dollars are like tax bonds that deal with schools and prisons and jails. That, I mean, all counties, communities, cities, states, and the whole nation should be informed about these meetings and should follow up, because just because you show up at a meeting, if you don't follow up, it's your money they're spending.
Mm-hmm. So how do they tap into that? So they have to attend the meeting in order to tap into the access funds that are available, or is it just a process of going on that particular website and applying for those funds?
No, they don't have to, but what they could do is ask from the whatever Board of State Community Corrections to make sure that there's a community engagement. See, since it's your money, you should be able to ask for that information to disclose. And like what we've been doing on the basically on the August 10th and 11th and the June 22nd and 23rd through the video, you're going to see that we asked that we're part of the request for proposal process. What they need to do is make sure that there's an executive steering committee with agencies like this that have lived experience, because you're doing the work, but you're not changing the policy. You're not changing the issue. So they can ask for it to be posted, or they can, like, contact and follow up with all of us so that we can create a regional narrative and a national narrative and a state narrative and a local narrative.
Yeah, that's really good, because we have people that have stopped the violence, nonprofits, and we have some that just work directly with disabled children. Then we know some that are just save the black boys. We just know a variety of different kinds, and so each one of those fit in that criteria because it's community based. But it also, in my mind, it's also preventative work that they're doing as well.
But instead of preventative, see, that's the whole thing. When I started to walk, when my son died, preventative pays to stop gangs and everything else, and perpetuates the bias, the implicit bias that the systems have, because they can't do for us what we aren't doing for ourselves. So for those communities that are dealing you need culturally relevant services and support. And like I was expressing with John, that doesn't deal with preventative. That deals with interventions based upon racial equity, cultural equity, whether it be school, educational equity. If you don't have books that are from heroes, if you don't have businesses and everything, what the nonprofits and faith-based organizations in Sacramento are talking about with our input are the disparities. Because you don't know the language, so you can't ask for the services, because you don't know that equity is different than equality.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh. Okay, so what you're saying, when a nonprofit, regardless of where they're at in the United States, they have to know the language in order for them to...
Especially for race, because there's still a color line. From abolition to now, they're still color line. And when you look at prisons, they're usually built by fields. So from the fields of slavery to the fields of incarceration, they ain't nothing changed because they you have a disparity. You have a disparity that deals with the same treatment, and it's based upon their standards, not yours. So cultural equity, educational equity, basically those of you that can do it different, uniquely, don't duplicate services. You're unserved communities. And so the key word that we are using in Monterey County is healing-informed, culturally relevant equity, whether it be through the arts, whether that it be through like a healing circle like that we do as women together, but we're unique in our what we do. You have to be unique. You're unique and peculiar anyway, but use the word equity and underserved communities.
Wow, because that makes a lot of sense. Because a lot of people, back in the day, I was doing grant writing, and quite a few of my grants went through. But you're right; it's a choice of words, and it's the wording. And a lot of times, people don't know the exact words to use, or they don't have the proper figures and so forth and so on. So giving them proper wording is really key.
And for how to look and access this type of grant, there's a lady right in Sacramento named Valinda Chaparral. And if anybody want to call in and get her number, or I could say her number on the phone. She knows.
Well, what I'll do is I'll post it afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. That way, because sometimes people don't have pens and paper, but. You can just inbox it to me, and I'll make sure that it's posted and her name and everything, because the information that you're sharing is really valuable. And because we don't have a lot of time, we just don't want no one to miss out on anything. So I'll cross my heart. I will post that. But go ahead. What you're saying.
Okay. And the other thing is when you look at health equity, the priorities of the Executive Steering Committee, which are appointed by the governor and the assembly, are based upon a waiver of Medi-Cal. It's Assembly Bill 1056. So that basically when you deal with your culture and you deal with your service providers where don't come from where you come from, what we've done and how we got funded even from philanthropy is, again, dealing with health equity, you deal with the whole family. So it has to be community and family focused through strength, so that when somebody's incarcerated and they come home, or when that you're dealing with whatever you're funded for, you don't have to say for the issue. You don't deal with preventative, because that feeds into the status quo and the stereotypes that we have a problem and we have an issue instead of empowering people where they're at. So health equity based upon culturally relevant.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to let the audience know that if you want to join the conversation or elaborate on something or ask a question, please press 1 and I would let you in. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Pam.
Okay. So what I began to do was show up where no one was expected. In the midst of Mexican, indigenous, low-income, I wanted to change the narrative, especially there in Salinas in 2014, there was 4 people shot. And with the use of force policy, they said a closed fist to the face was a use of force option. Well, me coming out of a retirement, I know that that's not the way that it should be done. But sometimes, basically, unless you sit at those tables like city council, commissions, and all that, the only decision makers are ones that have never been part of our community. So,
mm-hmm.
With this proposition, with assembly bills and everything else, I have to stress that it has to be action-based, and access to information or being able to have focus group meetings outside of working hours are the most important thing for the impacted communities to open up their eyes and so that they're not mentally blind.
Okay. All right. Okay. We got a couple of callers want to either elaborate on something or either ask you a question. I'm going to go ahead on and let them in. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Caller that's calling from the area code 831, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Hello, caller. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Well, we'll go to the next caller then. Let's go to the next one.
Hello, caller. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Yes, caller, please state your name and where you're calling from.
McCall is my name. I'm from Salinas. I'm sorry.
Yes. Okay. Wait. Would you want to ask a question or elaborate on something?
Oh, I was listening to our information, which is very important. A lot of people don't have information. That's the whole thing. I was listening. I was taking it all in. I'm pleased.
Okay. All right, then. Okay. All right. Okay. Continue listening, and thank you for calling. Okay. I'm going to let somebody else in. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Tommy Cole, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Brown and Mrs.
Okay.
J? How are you all?
We're fine, thank you.
Okay, good. And Ms. Pamela, how are you?
I'm getting better all the time. I'm getting better all the time because we're breaking the silence right now.
Yes, ma'am.
We're breaking this ice. Look, my heart goes out to you. I understand that you had a son pass away, you know, and you know, being a parent myself, you know, that's a hard pill to swallow. So, you know, but I encourage you, and I thank God for you, because in spite of your trials, you know, you're still out here, you know, opening up doors for other folks to pass through. My question is, you spoke about the cultural relevance and the language, and I own a nonprofit organization, okay, and it's just some language that I just don't quite understand, you know, because I hadn't tapped into any funds that would come through my nonprofit organization, and we own a multi nonprofit organization. It can go all sorts of ways. But right now we're more interested in the entertainment world and everything that has to do with entertainment. And so this is what we were trying to get funds to come through. If you can so kindly direct us toward that way.
Well, like I said, the cultural relevancy means being able to tell your own story and break the silence. So with the arts over here, what the Mexican community has done through healing, informed service and support, you need to offer healing, informed service and support. It deals with trauma informed. So if you use it to educate and to advocate people to be able to heal and rebuild, from their grandparents, their ancestors, and elders. Culturally relevant means like what Spike Lee used to do back in the day, where that you show, or like what John Brown is doing, that you tell it like it is, and you use it to educate, because you don't have equity in education. So you could get funding with educational equity. You could get it through the arts, but you have to say culturally relevant support and services that are trauma informed, because nobody can tell your story or has lived your experience like you have.
Yes, ma'am. Hey, I'm writing all this down now. Hey, I thank you so much too, now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in class and I'm learning and I don't mind.
What? And you know, I said that no words. I'm like, bro, she's got my keyboard better than mine, because I'm a word critic for days. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. So in other words, what you're saying, Ms. Pam, if like, for example, he has a nonprofit and he's in entertainment, okay, but he wouldn't go up there and he wouldn't apply for that entertainment. He would have to work in a specific like safe healing and all of that, that's pretty right. Pretty, you know, I think that's pretty informative.
Yeah, because that's what we do is interventions through basically what the Mexicans call theatrical. So you have to have a pathway that makes a difference. So you're doing the same job, you're just calling it a different language. You know,
yeah.
you're meeting people where they're at, and through their scripts, you're helping them build equity. You know, the difference between a house and a home is what you put in it, right?
That's right. That's right.
So you tell the story, and if you look around, nothing looks like you or feels like you or is like you. So then you can get that through, like I said, healing informed revenue.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
That makes a lot of sense. Because if they can benefit off, if they even think they could benefit off of it as well or gain some from, they're more willing to give that money out. Because it's a benefit from giving that money out.
Right.
And it's a sound investment because when that you deal with intervention, you deal with relationship. Like, example, down in L.A., there's a organization called Anti-Recidivism Coalition, and someone that was in Soledad with me named Sam Lewis is teaching life skills. There's a guy named Scott Budnick that is basically the co-chair of the Board of State Community Corrections. He stopped producing the films and being in the films in Hollywood to make this his life. This is what that he does now for his life because he saw that the youth were being incarcerated for life from 14 on. And so he goes in up and down the state of California and he is over this funding. So in dealing with culture, arts, and everything like that, right now with the executive steering committee, they're getting our input, and over there you should be doing the same thing, talking about healing informed practices instead of gang prevention and all that, where that you can invest in families and develop the heritage and the history of fourth generation or fifth generation, because, you know, that way you break the silence and they'll invest in you because, like I said, if you don't, 60% of the taxpayers' money go into law enforcement. So don't say prevention, say intervention.
Intervention.
Mm. Intervention.
Okay. Okay, well, we got 2 minutes left on the show, and I'm going to ask Ms. J to please close us out.
Wow, this is one of those shows that I say, dang, we just don't have enough time. No, really, because you're like, okay, well, what else? Go over some more words. But it's been a very informative show. I've written down a lot of stuff, so I'll be able to share it on the thank you comments. But I really appreciate you coming. I know it's so much more that you have to that you can share to different organizations. So for anybody listening, I'm going to be posting her information and contact information and some of these great words she used so that, you know, help you out. But I really like to thank you, Ms. Pam, for taking the time to come and share this information because doing things like this really opens up so many things for so many people. And like was mentioned earlier, we can't do anything if we don't know it's there. And, you know, so I appreciate you just opening up and telling us about all these wonderful things. But if you had one positive thing to say to the community, those in the nonprofit, those other advocates such as yourself, what would that be?
Actually, build the relationships because I didn't have what I'm modeling what that I want for all the rest of your communities. And my son is no longer here. My son's name is Christopher, but by being able to like talk on the radio today, nobody else has to be a Christopher. All single moms, all fathers and everybody, I want a call to action because my son said moments are given to us, but minutes can be taken away. So my positive thing is that you're actually hearing, you're feeling, and your eyes are open to mothers like me that I have to deal with the grief that the system wasn't in place.
All right. Okay, well, the time is up, you know, and I just want to say thank you, Ms. Pam, for calling in. And with that said, good night, everybody.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good night. Thank you for joining us. Have a great evening.
Right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.